2012 AP 1818 CR State versus Raymond G. Gonzalez. Arguing on behalf of the defendant is Assistant State Public Defender Caitlin Lamb. Arguing on behalf of the state is Assistant Attorney General Daniel O'Brien. Ms. Lamb, you have 25 minutes and then 5 minutes in rebuttal. Mr. O'Brien, you have 30 minutes. Ms. Lamb, you may proceed.
May it please the court. My name is Caitlin Lamb, and I represent Mr. Ramon Gonzalez. At issue in this case is whether forcing Mr. Gonzalez to open his mouth and reveal his platinum teeth to the jury when he chose not to testify violated his right against self-incrimination in a battery to a prisoner case. This court should hold that the right against self-incrimination is violated when an individual is compelled to reveal a physical attribute that is testimonial and incriminating. This proposed rule is consistent with binding case law. First, for a violation of the right against self-incrimination to occur with regard to a physical attribute, the act must be testimonial. An act is testimonial when it explicitly or implicitly expresses a factual assertion or discloses information. A testimonial act can be verbal or nonverbal. Pennsylvania v. Muniz explains that an act is testimonial when the communication conveys content. In Muniz, the United States Supreme Court found that a defendant's response in an operating well-intoxicated case was testimonial because the content of his answer supported that he was mentally confused.
So he spoke.
That is correct.
And there were other issues in Muniz, others that were not testimonial, other aspects of that case.
Yes, that is correct. In Muniz, the court indicated that the slurring of his speech, for example, was not testimonial and was a simple physical characteristic. But an answer to a question regarding his sixth birthday was testimonial because it conveyed or communicated content that supported that he was mentally confused.
Say that again? What was the last part of your sentence?
In Muniz, the defendant was asked whether or not he knew the date of his sixth birthday, and his response was, "I don't know." And the court held that that was testimonial because it conveyed content. So it communicated or supported the answer that he was mentally confused. Likewise, here, forcing Mr. Gonzalez to open his mouth and reveal his platinum teeth to the jury was testimonial because of its content.
What did it reveal? If you're using the Muniz test because it conveyed content, what content did it reveal?
In this case, the content was fierceness or an image of toughness. So similar to Muniz, it was conveying or communicating that Mr. Gonzalez was tough. And this was incriminating and was more likely to have made the jury infer that Mr. Gonzalez had participated in the battery.
Why do you take the position that it communicated toughness as opposed to communicated identification information? The information from the victim was that the perpetrator, as I recall anyway, had a platinum tooth, and wouldn't it also communicate that the defendant has a platinum tooth?
Well,
what area of law causes you to steer to the argument of what it communicated? What case, I mean?
The case law does not indicate that there is an exception for identification. So even if a physical attribute was used for the purposes of identification. If its testimonial was compelled and was incriminating, then there is a violation of the Fifth Amendment.
I'm aware of that. That's why I'm asking you, what case do you rely on that causes you to kind of steer towards fierceness as opposed to identification, since there is no exception for identification for testimony?
Well, the fierceness comes from at trial. During the trial, the attorney had objected because one of the grounds was it violated Mr. Gonzalez's Fifth Amendment rights because his teeth had a fierce-looking appearance. And so that's our support for the fact that it's fierceness. And in regards to arguing that fierceness is a communication that conveys content, we're looking towards Nunez, which discusses testimonial and focuses on a testimonial act occurs when that act is conveying or communicating some type of content.
Did you take that route because you think it underscores or tees up a kind of prejudice sort of argument?
So the prejudice component certainly goes to whether or not the physical attribute was testimonial. So in this case, the fierceness is conveying content and was prejudicial in that respect. And so that's part of the Fifth Amendment analysis, is just simply that Mr. Gonzalez opening his mouth and revealing these platinum teeth was a communication, and it was conveying an image of fierceness, not mild-manneredness or being docile. And so in that respect, requiring Mr. Gonzalez to open his mouth and reveal his teeth to the jury had a testimonial component.
Even if it didn't have a testimonial component, you could argue a prejudice, can't you? That the probative value is outweighed by the prejudice.
In this particular case, there was no statutory objection regarding relevancy, so whether or not the probative value was outweighed by prejudice. So that was not specifically objected to on the record.
It would be waived if you tried to make that argument.
Yes. However, the prejudice does contribute to our analysis that this was testimonial.
I have a question for you. You seems to me, I'm sorry, were you done? You relied on Muniz.
Yes.
That's a 1990 case, and it deals with testimonial relating to self-incrimination.
Yes, that's correct.
All right. And that's what this case is about, self-incrimination.
Yes.
In 2004, the United States Supreme Court has a case which is very controversial and still being figured out. Crawford. You're familiar with that?
Yes.
And that's testimonial, and it's under the Confrontation Clause. Do you think there are two different definitions of testimonial? One under the Confrontation Clause and one under self-incrimination?
Yes. The
Do you think there are two different definitions of testimonial?
Yes, that's
And they
correct.
Are? Okay.
In regards to the Confrontation Clause,
yes.
That involves a different amendment, the Sixth Amendment.
Well, I know that.
And it also involves different concerns. So they're at issue in that case. In those confrontation cases are whether or not a defendant had a right to confront a witness against
yeah,
him.
Yeah, and the reason the court says you may confront or not is whether it's testimonial. Isn't that the thing? And then there are exceptions. If they're unavailable, even if it's testimonial, you can let it in. But other exceptions. But I'm asking you, would you have, if you had both confrontation and a self-incrimination, and I can't think of an example at the moment, in the same case or in even different cases, do you use different? I want to know whether the Crawford debate and discussion of what's testimonial is of any relevance to this case, because no one cited it, and I missed it.
That is just a completely different definition, and as
testimonial.
You, of testimonial, and as you indicated, that is a separate area of law that is currently explored, whereas here, it's also important to note that the cases, the binding cases that deal with the right against self-incrimination, those do not touch on the Confrontation Clause cases or do not refer to the definition of testimonial in the analysis. So it's our position that that is a separate testimonial or separate inquiry, and it's a different constitutional right and contains different has different concerns involved.
And certainly the same word or concept can have different meanings in different parts, different contexts, statutory or constitutional. Okay? So you can have two different ones. And how do they differ, just to let me know?
So in terms of, well, that wasn't specifically briefed in this case. In terms of the confrontation, that would be whether or not the person, it involves concerns about a witness incriminating the person, whereas in this particular instance, the emphasis is on the defendant, whether or not the defendant, his right against self-incrimination is violated, versus in the confrontation clauses where the focus is on whether the defendant's right to cross-examine.
I understand, but they're both defendants' rights, okay.
Does it make any difference that Crawford is in the context of out-of-court testimonial statements as opposed to the case before us is in-court testimonial statements?
Well, the Fifth Amendment could apply in out-of-court statements. It could also apply in-court statements. In terms of the Fifth Amendment, that would not be a distinguishing factor. There are Fifth Amendment cases that involve when an individual is arrested, whether or not a individual was compelled to make a testimonial statement. And so
okay. I was just wondering because, of course, Crawford is a out-of-court, is hearsay case, you know, and whether or not that out-of-court statement.
You could have testimony here that the defendant had platinum teeth, couldn't you?
It would not be a violation of the Fifth Amendment right if a different witness had testified that Mr. Gonzalez had platinum teeth.
Is there any violation of a witness coming and saying he had platinum teeth?
That would not be a Fifth Amendment.
Would it be a confrontation?
That is possible. I think that would depend on the facts of the case and what was involved in that analysis.
Could you talk about tattoos? I understand that some people put on tattoos that say "Born to Kill." Would you be saying if I had a tattoo that said "Born to Kill," and there was some dispute? Whether
I don't know why people are laughing, Justice. Yeah, I think you may continue.
All right. If there were some dispute whether about identification, and I said I don't want to show my tattoo on "Born to Kill" to help to identify me, because that would convey the message that I was tough, might not be a nice person. Would you be making the same argument?
Well, that would, once again, depend very much on the facts. But if the tattoo, "Born to Kill," was in fact testimonial and was compelled, so was not something that a officer had just observed, the individual was actually compelled to show that tattoo, and it was incriminating, under our proposed rule, that would be a violation requiring the defendant to show his tattoo. Certainly, the state, there would be other ways that the state could introduce evidence of that. As I just mentioned, that evidence could come in if the if a different witness were to testify that the individual had this tattoo. But just if it's testimonial, if it's incriminating, and if it's compelled, then there is a violation against the right against self-incrimination.
Well,
if people put tattoos on their faces, I mean, if we put tattoos on a defendant's face, would the defendant be able to say, I don't have to be in the courtroom. I don't have to show my face to the jury.
If the defendant didn't have a hat on, if the defendant hadn't put a bandage over, there would be no compulsion because that would just be a characteristic that would be open to observation. So there would be no compulsion element.
So your argument then depends somewhat on showing something that isn't visible when you just walk by somebody. Is that what you mean by no compulsion?
Yes. That compulsion would be that the state or the government would compel an individual to reveal the physical attribute.
Okay.
So, for instance, the jury could observe a defendant's height or a weight or perhaps hair color, and that would not be something that was compelled. Our requirement that it be compelled was here where Mr. Gonzalez was, he was sitting, and he was actually required to open his mouth and reveal his teeth.
What if I were in court and there was a problem with identification, and one of the points of identification is that the person had very light hair, okay? So I'm the defendant. I come to court with a scarf on, well, covering my hair, and I don't have religious proclivities that would cause me to wear a scarf for those kinds of personal purposes. But I want that scarf on. It makes me feel more comfortable, and I wear it almost all the time. Can I be forced to take the scarf off in front of the jury?
Well, first of all, it would depend whether or not that hair color was testimonial, so if it was conveying content. Second, it seems that if you were forced to take the scarf off, that you would be compelled to reveal a characteristic. And so that could be a violation of the Fifth Amendment. Once again, though, depending on the facts of the particular case, if there was a testimonial image and if you were being required to take off that scarf. Once again, though, the state would have other means of introducing this evidence at trial. For instance, the state could have a witness testify that you had a light-colored hair, and so it's not completely preventing the state from introducing this evidence. It's just simply asserting that requiring you to show your hair is a violation of the Fifth Amendment right.
Okay. Thank you.
That's for identification, as I understood the question, the showing of the hairs for identification. That gets me back to my earlier question to you, and I think of the Schmerber case, and I'm reading from, where am I reading from, 764, where it says, both federal and state courts have usually held that it, being the Fifth Amendment, offers no protection against compulsion to submit to fingerprinting. And when I read that, I thought, no big deal, that's done out of court. Photographing, no big deal. I didn't pause with that. Or measurements. And then it goes on, to write or speak for identification. And then I paused because how do you get around that language? I mean, my sense is showing his teeth for me was for identification.
So a physical characteristic such as eye color, hair color, handwriting, voice. That's just a simple physical characteristic. What makes our case distinguishable is that Mr. Gonzalez's argument is that Mr. Gonzalez's teeth were conveying content. So it was not just a simple identification. His teeth were conveying the image of a fierceness or toughness. So even if the court were to determine that he was required to show his teeth for identification, what's critical is that it had a testimonial component. So it's more than just a simple physical characteristic. It had a testimonial component, it was incriminating, and Mr. Gonzalez was compelled to reveal his teeth.
Does the record explain how Mr. Gonzalez got these teeth?
That is not indicated on the record. Although platinum teeth are different from just a missing tooth or a gap in someone's teeth, because platinum teeth, they're an elective or a voluntary characteristic. So Mr. Gonzalez chose to put platinum on his teeth. And so in that respect, that also goes to our argument that this was a testimonial, because he was electing to put these teeth, and these teeth were conveying an image or a content of fierceness.
Ms. Lamb, let's assume for a minute that the police wanted to have a lineup in order to be sure that they were going to charge the right person. They knew that a person from cell block 10 or whatever had platinum teeth. Would there be some violation, do you think, if they required the five or six men in the lineup to open their mouths?
Well, that presents somewhat of a different question here, because it isn't an in-court identification of Mr. Gonzalez, but it is possible that there could be a Fifth Amendment violation, because they are requiring him to open his mouth and show his teeth, versus, say, an officer had observed him having those teeth, or if there was even a lineup where he just had voluntarily smiled and had revealed those teeth. So in the situation of a lineup, it's possible, depending on the circumstances, once again, it would require that those teeth be testimonial. So in regards to just showing teeth, for instance, there might not be a testimonial component, that it be incriminating, and then additionally that it be compelled. So depending on the facts, it is possible there could be a Fifth Amendment violation, but once again, that would be very dependent on the facts of this case. Additionally, this case, once again, he was required to open up his mouth and show his teeth to the jury.
Well, he might be required to do that so that Mr. Brown could pick out the person who had attacked him at the lineup. I'm having difficulty following your distinction. What's the distinction?
Well, the distinction from if there was an ordinary lineup and a person was showing height, weight, that wouldn't be any type of, you know, violation of the Fifth Amendment, even showing teeth, because those characteristics, they're not testimonial. So under our rule, the first inquiry has to be, was this a testimonial act? Was it conveying some type of content? And so in the lineup situation, it's possible if the individual was forced to reveal some type of testimonial act that it could be a violation of the Fifth Amendment. But if it was just simply hair or eye color or teeth, that does not have that testimonial. And then second, it would have to be compelled. So in the lineup situation, if it was platinum teeth, the testimonial component satisfied. If Mr. Gonzalez was compelled to open his mouth, that would be a Fifth Amendment violation. But if he simply, on his own act, opened his mouth and that was captured, that would not satisfy the compulsion component.
This might be under the category of real life is stranger than fiction, but I remember having a burglary case where it was nighttime, someone broke into their home, and they couldn't really see the person, but they could see that the guy had a spider web tattooed to his eye, like around his eye. So that was the identifying fact in that case. If he came to court and put makeup all over his spider web, but that was the thing that identified him, what would you do with that? How's your argument fit with that?
Well, that would turn on, in that particular facts of the case, whether or not it would satisfy the testimonial component. So whether or not, and once again, it would depend on the facts, whether that spiderweb tattoo was conveying some type of content. Just a simple tattoo as an identifying characteristic, that would not be a violation of the Fifth Amendment.
Could the judge compel him to take the makeup off so the jury can see the spiderweb?
That would satisfy the compelled version, but once again, it would turn on whether or not this was a violation of Fifth. It would really turn on that testimonial component, whether or not this was...
I'm not making this up, actually, but it's kind of interesting. Well, I think your argument's interesting. It's sort of that, what can you require a defendant to do and what can't you require him to do? You can't require someone to come in, you know, jail clothing. You can't require them to be there in shackles in front of the jury. There are a lot of things you can't require because they send certain messages to the jury. And yours is an extension, sort of that argument.
Yes, that's absolutely correct. We're arguing that in this particular case, based on the facts of this case, requiring him to open his mouth and show these platinum teeth, they were communicating or it was conveying a message to the jury. And so because of that testimonial aspect, that was why there was a violation of the Fifth Amendment right, because it was testimonial, incriminating, and compelled.
Is that what the cases say, that prison garb, shackles, are not, you don't allow that in the courtroom, or you can't compel them to do that because it's testimony, it does content, or is it just because it's prejudicial?
Well, those cases weren't specifically discussed in the brief. In my opinion, the shackles just go to show the lengths that the court takes to try to prevent a jury from seeing things that might potentially prejudice them against a defendant.
Right. And you can argue it's content, I suppose, because it says that he's in jail, although that's probably quite obvious anyway. So if the witness testifies that the person that committed the assault had a huge scar on his chest, you can describe it, you can't make him take off his shirt in court?
Well, I think that would depend on the scar. So, for instance, if that person had made a scar on their own chest, so it was some type of artwork with a scar, that could potentially have a testimonial aspect versus a scar that might just be naturally occurring. So, for instance, if somebody had gotten a cut and it was a scar, there does not seem that there would be this.
There's a scar that they got out of a knife fight. Does that give the content that this defendant gets into a lot of fights and a lot of knife fights, and that this case involves a knife fight, therefore it's content? I mean, that's what I hear you say.
It's possible, and that situation is a lot less clear than the situation that is specifically presented here, where the teeth are the fact that he had voluntarily elected to put these platinum teeth in, and they were conveying content or image. And so it's possible in the knife case that it would be testimonial, but that is a little less clear factually than here, where Mr. Gonzalez, as I was saying, had these voluntary elective characteristics put into his mouth that was conveying a fierce-looking image.
How do we know that that's what the message is? That isn't a message I would take from if I saw the platinum teeth. How do we know that that's a message that many people would take? I mean, what's the test on the content? Many people would think it was fierceness. Many people would think it's drug-related. Many people would think it's gang-related.
Cheaper than gold.
Cheaper than gold. I mean, where do you find out about the message?
Well, I don't think the case law has specifically explored in terms of the message. But here we are pointing to the record, which does indicate that trial counsel had objected on the basis that his platinum teeth did appear fierce. And so here, it's our position that it was conveying content or communicating a message.
I don't know quite how to ask this question, but it seems the defendant voluntarily acquired these platinum teeth. And I suspect that he did want to convey the image to people that he was tough, that he was, I'll just settle on tough. Doesn't he almost waive the right to object to having a jury see what everyone else has seen?
Well, I think what the focus is on is whether or not he was compelled to show the platinum teeth, not whether or not he voluntarily. And so that doesn't factor into our proposed rule. The voluntary nature of it goes more to the testimonial aspect of it. I think what you're specifically wondering is, does he waive it? And no, I do not believe that he waives it. I think the inquiry in terms of compelled is here he's being forced to show it. It wasn't as if he had wanted to show his teeth to the jury.
But apparently he wanted to show his teeth to everybody else.
But I think what the focus is here is on whether or not a Fifth Amendment or his right against self-incrimination was violated. And so it's whether or not the government compelled him to show that characteristic, which in this case they did at trial. And so it goes against his right. In this case, he had chosen not to testify, and it goes against his right to remain silent. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. You have 5 minutes in rebuttal. Mr. O'Brien, representing the state of Wisconsin.
May it please the court. This court should not lose sight of the fact that the sole issue presented is whether Mr. Gonzalez's Fifth Amendment right to be compelled to testify against himself was violated. This is not, as counsel admitted, a case about whether the evidence is relevant. This is not a case about the 90403 balancing test. That is not why this court granted review. That is not why we are here. There are three components that need to be shown before the Fifth Amendment is even implicated. There must be compulsion to reveal evidence. That was satisfied here. Mr. Gonzalez was compelled by the judge to open his mouth and smile for the jury. It must be incriminating, obviously, because if it wasn't incriminating, we wouldn't be here. So his smile was incriminating, whether it helped identify him as the assailant or even if it helped show that he's a fierce person who might be an assailant. The critical issue here is whether this act revealed testimonial communications. Counsel says repeatedly that this was testimonial, this was testimonial, this was testimonial. Simply saying something is so doesn't make it so. Testimonial communication is forcing a defendant to reveal something in his mind, to admit his guilt of the offense charged. Cases are legion on this, and counsel hasn't cited a single U.S. Supreme Court case or a single case of this court or the Court of Appeals that holds to the contrary.
Counsel, in your definition, you said testimonial is forcing. And yet, when you laid out the three elements, force, compulsion, was the first element. So is part of the definition of testimonial requiring compulsion? It seems that's rather circuitous.
No.
Okay.
No, but you don't get to the testimonial issue unless there's compulsion. If there's no compulsion, again, we're not here.
Okay, so what is the definition of testimonial communication? But I assume the definition of testimonial communication, what is testimonial,
well, I'll start
is not requiring force or compulsion.
I'll start with Justice Holmes in 1910.
Good.
United States v. Holt, where he said compulsion is the extortion of communication from the defendant.
I've asked what is testimonial. See, I don't think it's a matter of symmetry for me. You said the three components here are compulsion, incrimination, and testimonial. Then you started to define testimonial, and the first part of the definition is force or compulsion.
Okay,
and I'm saying, how do you define testimonial?
All right, well, then exclude that.
Okay.
Testimonial is simply a communication.
Okay.
Revealing the defendant's thoughts, revealing the defendant's, we'll start with Holt, Justice Holmes' decision in Holt, but also the recent decision, the more recent decisions in United States v. Hubble, Doe v. United States, Pennsylvania v. Nees itself, Schnurrer v. California, United States v. Wade, they all talk about forcing a defendant to reveal the contents of his own mind. That's a direct quote out of Doe v. United States. Forcing the defendant to disclose his knowledge that he might have. That's United States v. Wade. So, yeah, I mean, in other words, getting at what's in the defendant's mind against his will. And that's not what happened here. This is I would say, a mind-run physical identification case. The victim says, I was attacked by a man with platinum teeth. The state believes the man has platinum teeth, the man sitting in the courtroom. Just as they can ask the witness, can you identify the person who attacked you in court? Yes, he's sitting in the brown suit over there. The state, under the Fifth Amendment, under all these cases, whether you go back to Justice Holmes' decision in 1910 in Holt, or if you go back to this court's decision in 1903 in Thornton v. State, the courts have uniformly said you can compel a defendant to show his tattoo, smile, take off his hat, show that he has a birthmark on his bald head, if it's relevant. And again, the argument here is not, was this relevant, was its probative value substantially outweighed by this was probative. And there's no argument that the probative value was substantially outweighed by precedent. The whole issue is whether the Fifth Amendment prohibits what happened here.
Yeah, I know that's the general issue. And you have the elements that you started out with, compulsion, incrimination, and testimonial. And we're focusing on not incrimination, I think, not so much compulsion, but what is testimonial. Now, the LaPlante case, 186 with second at 437, says to be testimonial, an accused a communication, quote, must itself explicitly or implicitly relate to a factual assertion or disclose information. Why isn't the factual assertion that is of import here, that the perpetrator had a platinum tooth and so does the defendant, that the defendant's physical appearance is consistent with the perpetrator when identification is an issue. So why? That's what I'm stumbling on.
Because all these
cases... Does it relate to a factual assertion or disclose information?
Because this is physical evidence. And the cases uniformly hold that the defendant's body as physical evidence, using the defendant's body as physical evidence, does not violate the Fifth Amendment, regardless of the information it conveys. And that is clear, that if platinum teeth show his identity, that's information, but that doesn't get into his mind. That doesn't make him express that he's guilty.
This definition of LaPlante correct, that to be testimonial, it must itself explicitly or implicitly relate to a factual assertion or disclose information? Is that a correct definition of testimonial?
I think that's a little loose, because disclosing information, obviously, if you're forced to take off your hat, that discloses information that you're bald. But all the cases say that that's okay. What's crucial is the definition, again, going back to the whole case, but cases like Hubble and Doe, Pennsylvania Muniz, which talk about disclosing what's in the defendant's mind. For example, in Schmermer v. California, you cannot, it violates the Fifth Amendment to ask him without Miranda warnings whether he was drunk. And he says, yes, that doesn't get in. But it doesn't violate the Fifth Amendment to take a blood sample from him that shows he was drunk. That's the first is a testimonial, the latter is not. And that's clear. That's using, the first is using the defendant's mind against him. The second one is using his body against him.
It is that definition that the Smith court used in the state of Wisconsin versus Juan Smith. And it applied that definition to Smith in his request to be able to show his gold tooth. And the court said that showing his tooth was nonverbal conduct that contained a testimonial component. Why isn't this nonverbal conduct in this case that contains a testimonial component?
Well, again, what is the testimonial component here? It identified him. It identified him, and that's perfectly fine under the Fifth Amendment. I just find it hard when I read all these cases, including this Court's decision in 1903, Thornton, which clearly says that you can compel a person to reveal his physical appearance. You know, I think it's interesting. Counsel argues this was testimonial because it made him look fierce. It was fierce appearing. Looks and appearances are admissible under the – don't violate the Fifth Amendment.
Mr. O'Brien, I would argue that he has a platinum teeth because he wants to convey the message to everyone who sees him, whether in a correctional institution or not. He's conveying the message, I am tough, and that – I have committed tough acts. He's conveying the message that I've committed tough acts, even tough acts similar to the one I am now accused of doing. I am tough. And that was the Smith. It was other acts evidence in effect. It wasn't allowed when the defendant wants to bring it in. But it's allowed when the state wants to bring it in. So why isn't he conveying, I am tough?
But again, that goes to relevance and materiality. That goes to 90401. That doesn't go to the Fifth Amendment.
That's why it's other
That doesn't
acts.
Go to the Fifth Amendment.
Well.
Just because it conveys that he's tough, well, that's an image he chose. And again, image, appearance, you know, that is something that if being required to show what your physical characteristic, whether it's voluntarily obtained, whether it's a natural birth characteristic, that doesn't run afoul of Fifth Amendment. You may have a pretty good argument that it's not relevant to the issue of whether a person with platinum teeth attacked Mr. Brown, but that isn't being made here. That's not the argument here.
If he were coerced and said, I'm tough, and no one better start up with me, and I've taken them all on, and I can beat them all, and it was a coerced statement that he's saying, is that testimonial? And would you let that in?
So you're saying when he is interrogated by police, is that without Miranda? Or what?
Mm-hmm. You can put it any way you want. And I don't want to get into confrontation.
I mean, I guess I...
Is it testimonial, or doesn't it apply on self-incrimination?
Could you repeat the hypothetical again? I guess I didn't quite understand.
Well, it's a different version of what Justice Bradley asked. Is the concept of self-incrimination and testimonial have to be in court rather than out of court?
No, and I think the cases apply both across the board. They apply to compel disclosures in court, compel disclosures at the police station, police lineups, blood draws. all of that. It's the Fifth Amendment. Does the Fifth Amendment prohibit the state, the government, from doing this, whether it's before trial, at trial, et cetera? And that's the only issue that's here. And
so the cops, without Miranda, compel him to say, in the way they're questioning and centering, et cetera, that, and he says he's tough, he can take anyone on, he's beaten up 35 people, he can beat up anyone in the jail. Would that all be in?
If they violated Miranda, I would say no.
No, they didn't violate Miranda.
They didn't violate Miranda?
He wasn't in custody.
Well, then it gets in, assuming it's relevant to the issues in dispute, yes. Just like any confession.
It's not a confession that I did this. It's a statement of how tough I am.
Right, and it probably isn't relevant in most cases. Just to say someone's tough, a lot of defendants are tough. There were 64 people in this cell block. I bet a lot of them were tough, and I bet maybe there were others that even had platinum teeth. Who knows? But that goes to relevancy. That doesn't go to the Fifth Amendment. If that statement shouldn't have gotten in, that doesn't prove a Fifth Amendment violation. If it was in response to a Miranda warning and was voluntary, then it's just a question of 90401 or 90403. And again, those issues aren't here. The issue is whether the Fifth Amendment was violated, and it's only violated if you can prove that he was forced to reveal the contents of his mind to basically admit his guilt. You know, the case law talks about the American system's preference for the accusatory form of justice, where the state has to prove the defendant's guilt through other witnesses, as opposed to the inculpatory form of justice in the Star Chamber, where a person was put on the witness stand and forced to testify against himself, to state under oath whether, in fact, he committed the crime. That's what we're getting at. That's what those cases, starting with Holt and going all the way through Wade, Doe, and Hubble, talk about, is compelling someone to basically admit his guilt. Forcing Mr. Gonzalez to smile for the jury doesn't admit that he kicked or stomped on Mr. Brown. It has a tendency to prove that he might have been one of those people. It's relevant. But it doesn't force him to admit his guilt. And that's really what we're talking about in these cases. And, you know, and I've cited a number of cases where this very issue came up. Teeth. You know, a defendant was forced to show his teeth because it was a distinctive identifying characteristic. And, you know, and I guess that gets to a point, too. You know, counsel talks about this fierce-looking appearance of Mr. Gonzalez. I want to make it clear, there is nothing in the record that when he smiled for the jury, he looked fierce. When that occurred, counsel did not make any record as to how he appeared, where he stood, what went on. The mention of fierce-looking occurred before he was ordered to smile for the jury, when they had the in-chambers conference, when counsel objected, raised a general objection, and then objected on Fifth Amendment grounds, but then argued basically a 90403 argument. By the way, this makes him look fierce, and I'm really worried about that. And the judge said, I'm overruling it. And then they come back into court, sir, would you smile for the jury? The court reporter notes that he smiled for the jury, period. And there's no record made of, well, I want the record to reflect that he looked fierce. You know, counsel's brief has pictures of two strangers with platinum teeth who look fierce, but there's Mr. Gonzalez's picture isn't in there. Mr. Gonzalez's picture was not attached to the post-conviction motion that shows how fierce he looks. So we don't know that he was fierce-looking. The jury might have found it humorous, might have thought these things looked interesting. So that's a big leap to say he was fierce-looking. There's no record to support that. And there was nothing in the post-conviction motion added to the record to support that factual assertion. But be that as it may, again, it gets back to, is Mr. Gonzalez being forced to testify against himself? And again, he's not revealing the contents of his mind, as these cases talk about.
Is it your position, is it the state's position, that any physical evidence, by definition, doesn't reveal the state of mind, that there is a bright line, and that, what's the language, real or physical or real, that, hey, never reveals state of mind, never reveals knowledge, never reveals the internal workings of the defendant. Can you think of any case that physical or real would be testimonial?
I think as a general rule, the defendant's body and the defendant's appearance can be compelled to be disclosed without violating the Fifth Amendment. Now there's an interesting exception.
A general rule, which means there are exceptions. Right?
Well, there's not. The exception would be if the physical appearance itself reveals the contents of the person's mind, reveals knowledge of guilt. And the example I cite is the case I cited, I think page 8 of our brief, Greer, United States v. Greer, the Second Circuit case in 2011, where the defendant was ordered to expose his tattoo for the jury, and the court said that's fine, but in the tattoo was a woman's name. And it turned out that the woman owned the car that had all the weapons in that the defendant was accused of possessing. And that the government used that woman's name in his tattoo to attach him to that car and those weapons. And that was a testimonial use by the state. That was not just identification of the defendant. This was linking the defendant to the crime, basically showing his knowledge, basically getting him, using that tattoo to get him to testify that, yes, he knew that woman because he had her name on his arm, and that he knew that those guns were in her car. That, the court said, is testimonial. However, the evidence wasn't excluded because they said Mr. Greer voluntarily put that name in his tattoo. The government didn't compel him to get that tattoo. It didn't compel him to put that name in there. Therefore, it's perfectly proper for the government to draw that connection, even though it's used for a testimonial purpose.
But if the government forced him to take off his shirt where the tattoo was on his chest, that's not compulsion, then. Is that right?
Well, sure, it's compulsion. Just as the government in Greer required him to roll up his sleeve. I mean, again, there's no dispute. There's compulsion here. And I don't think we should be conflating the concepts of compulsion or conflating the concepts of incrimination versus testimony. They're different things. And again, of course we have compulsion.
But you rely on voluntary. And so it's voluntary as to the tattoo, not voluntary rolling up his sleeve.
Yeah, but there's two different compulsions there.
That's right.
But that's compulsion to display a physical characteristic, which again, the cases all say that's okay. But then the government used that physical characteristic for a testimonial aspect that it had to separately justify. And it separately justified the fact that the testimonial aspect of it was voluntarily obtained by the defendant. And so I think, so you have two things. Now here we don't have that because clearly the state used Mr. Gonzalez's platinum teeth as relevant evidence to show that he was the man from cell 10 with the platinum teeth who Brown said attacked him along with the other three individuals. And so we don't need to get far afield here at all. I mean, the issue is, can the government force a person to display his teeth to show its relevant evidence of whether he was one of the assailants? And the answer is categorically yes. Every Supreme Court case, every state case, every case this court has issued says that's perfectly fine. And, counsel talks about our proposed new rule, and I don't know what that rule is. Is the rule that because I assume under the state constitution, they want this court to adopt a rule that a person with platinum teeth, as opposed to just two missing teeth or a gold tooth, is conveying testimony and there, as a matter of law, and therefore it violates the Fifth Amendment. Well, it violates the Wisconsin Constitution. Clearly, it doesn't violate the Fifth Amendment. So it violates the Wisconsin Constitution. And I don't know how you get there. I just don't. The state was not fishing for what's in his mind. It was using his appearance, not his head. Well, not what was inside his head. It was using the outside of his head to identify him, not what was inside of his head to prove his guilt. You know. And I think that's a critical distinction here. And I think, the Greer case talks about it, and it cites to Hubble and Doe and these U.S. Supreme Court cases where people voluntarily make out tax records. They voluntarily keep documents. The government knows they have them, and the government issues a summons or a subpoena for those documents. And the defendant comes in and says, I'm not turning those documents. They're self-incriminating. They're testimonial. And the government says, yeah, but you voluntarily made those out.
Counsel, speaking of what's on the outside of a person's head, and going back to perhaps one of the more amusing hypotheticals I've heard in my 6 years on this bench, Justice Prosser's tattoo on his forehead, Born to Kill. And would it make a difference, and he comes to court with a hat on? Now, that would not be the typical court etiquette. As a matter of course, a judge would inform or advise someone wearing a hat, not for religious reasons, to remove their hat. Fair enough?
Yeah.
Would it matter if Justice Prosser was on trial for killing someone versus shoplifting?
You know, the Fifth Amendment wouldn't prohibit that. What might bar that is whether it's relevant to the issues in dispute at trial. And I think the state would argue, yeah, it is relevant. It tends to prove that.
It's offered for identity in each case. It's offered for identity. There are witnesses to each. The shoplifting, the hypothetical shoplifting or the hypothetical other crime, it's offered for identity.
Yeah. Well, then it's admissible. Now, the defense attorney might argue, well, judge, the probative value is substantially outweighed by the prejudice, even though it is relevant to identity. But then you address that with jury instructions.
That's not the issue before us, though.
That's not the issue before us. And, you know, and that's another point I'd like to make here. You know, counsel kind of argues two different ways here. This shouldn't have gotten in because it violates the Fifth Amendment. However, the state could have produced a photo of him. Why didn't the state produce a photo of him? Or it wasn't necessary because there's really no dispute that that Gonzalez has platinum teeth. Well, there was no offer to stipulate here. No one presented a photo saying, why don't we just introduce this? It shows him with his platinum teeth. So, you know, that behooved defense counsel to make those alternative propositions or to make a 90403 argument. And that didn't happen here. Those issues of where someone has a very prejudicial looking tattoo, or let's say Mr. Gonzalez's platinum teeth said kill cops on them, that still doesn't violate the Fifth Amendment. However, it may bump up against 90403. And it may require a jury instruction. Ladies and gentlemen, you are not to use the display of Mr. Gonzalez's teeth for any purpose other than whether or not he was one of the, you know,
And the most obvious example of that would be if the state wanted to enter that, not for purposes of identification, but for purposes to show that he has a proclivity to kill cops.
Well, if he had killed a cop, that might be relevant. I mean,
there'd at least be a separate motion here.
Yeah, and let's assume, and although I don't think there's any foundation for the argument that, you know, drug dealers have platinum teeth, or gang members. Let's say gang members have platinum teeth as a rule. Well, if we have a gang penalty element, a gang enhancer element that has to be proven beyond a reasonable doubt, that might become highly relevant. And again, but we're outside the Fifth Amendment. That's not a Fifth Amendment issue. Those are whole separate issues. Throughout, I just keep this whole fierceness argument, that's a 90403 argument, even though counsel doesn't want to admit it. That's all that is. It's
a 90403 argument. A Greer argument.
He has
on his teeth, kill cops. Well, he did that voluntarily.
Well, that's true, and that's a risk he took. Again, if I were defense counsel, however, I would still say, Judge, yes, it is relevant, and yes, it doesn't violate the Fifth Amendment, but we need a jury instruction because that's prejudicial.
Okay, but that's, if Greer holds, and I haven't site-checked Greer to see if Greer is often used by other courts or has been distinguished.
Well, as far as I know, it hasn't been, and there are recent cases that follow it. However,
we'll see.
Its analysis is pretty good because it relies entirely on all the Supreme Court cases I discussed, Hubble, Doe, Holt, Schmerber, all of those cases, and distinguishes using the defendant's body as evidence as opposed to using his mind as evidence compelling someone. The government didn't compel him to get these teeth, just like the government doesn't compel someone to have a scar. That happens outside of government compulsion.
Counsel, was the State of Wisconsin versus Juan Smith case wrongly decided, and if so, why?
Be honest with you, I'm not prepared to discuss that. I'm not familiar with that case, and I don't know. All I know is an unpublished decision that has no precedential value. So
no, but it's persuasive to someone. Anyway,
I honestly don't know. I guess I don't know what the evidence was offered for in that case.
It was offered to prove that the officer misidentified him as the seller because the officer would have noticed his gold teeth if, in fact, he had been the drug dealer. Thus, had Smith been allowed to display his teeth, he would have given up his right to remain silent. So, it's a Fifth Amendment.
I don't know the facts of that case. I don't know what the motion in limine produced, when he got that gold teeth, whether it was before the crime or after the crime, whether he removed the gold tooth after the crime. I mean, those are all relevant issues that come into play here.
If it was offered for purposes of identity, how does that play out?
Again, it depends. It's irrelevant if he didn't have the tooth at the time of the crime. So I see my red light is on. Unless there are further questions.
It is. Thank you, Mr. O'Brien. Counsel for the defendant.
You can proceed.
Yes. The proposed rule in this case is that in order for a violation of the Fifth Amendment right to occur, there has to be a testimonial act, the act has to be compelled, and it has to be incriminating. And this is based or consistent with case law. And we are simply asking that the court apply this to our particular facts of the case. The state appears to concede that it was compelled and incriminating. As Justice Bradley noted, the definition of testimonial is that an act is explicitly or implicitly expressing a factual assertion or disclosing information. Testimonial does not require that the defendant's act be admitting guilt, just simply that it's disclosing information or a factual assertion, which in this case, the platinum teeth were communicating or conveying an image. This differs from physical characteristics in the case law, such as blood draw or baldness, where it's a simple physical act. This is testimonial in that it's conveying that image of fierce looking.
I'd like to go back to that. Your opposing counsel, Mr. O'Brien, points out there is nothing in the record to indicate that there was any finding, his trial counsel asking to make a record that a fierce-looking physical appearance was produced as a result of him displaying his platinum teeth, nor did the trial court make any such finding, nor was he asked to. Is that true?
Trial counsel objected on the partially on the grounds that his teeth were fierce-looking, and that was not something that was disputed by the state at that time. And so for that reason, that's...
Well, because a trial counsel makes an objection doesn't mean it's true. Right?
Yes, that's
okay.
Correct. There is no indication, though, as I mentioned, that the state was disputing this or that it was otherwise. Additionally, in that instance, it would be, I should note that we're just using this as, you know, fierceness or toughness. That's just an example of an image that platinum teeth can convey.
Did counsel at all agree to stipulate, and don't make my client show these teeth, we'll stipulate that he has platinum teeth?
That was not something that had happened on the record. Counsel did indicate, though, that there would have been other ways that the state could have presented the evidence that Mr. Gonzalez had platinum teeth. Additionally, it wasn't disputed that Mr. Gonzalez had these platinum teeth.
So his objection wasn't that the information got to the jury. His objection was that the jury saw this particular set of platinum, his grill.
Yes, the objection that requiring Mr. Gonzalez to open his mouth and reveal his teeth was a violation of the Fifth Amendment, and that it was prejudicial because his teeth had a fierce-looking appearance.
So do you think counsel was ineffective for not offering to let it in a different way?
That was not something that was specifically addressed or raised in this case.
Fair enough.
Further, in regards...
May I ask, in your view, was the defendant entitled to prevent a photograph of his teeth?
Could you please repeat the question?
Was the defendant entitled to prevent the government from obtaining a photograph of his teeth?
That would depend on how that photograph was obtained, in terms of if the government had required him to open his mouth and show his teeth, then it could potentially be something that was compelled and was in violation of the Fifth Amendment. Although, once again, the state could have introduced or had a witness testify, I saw Mr. Gonzalez's teeth and he had platinum teeth, and that would not have been a violation of the Fifth Amendment. So the focus in this case is really on how this evidence was presented. Mr. Gonzalez was ordered by the circuit court to open his mouth and show these platinum teeth to the jury. Further, Greer was discussed in terms of the tattoo, and I would point out that in Greer, the court did find that the tattoo with the name Tangela on it was testimonial, although that case is distinguishable in terms of compulsion in there. First of all, it was the officer that was testifying to the tattoo. Furthermore, the officer saw the tattoo. The defendant was not compelled to take off his shirt and show the tattoo. So this case is distinguishable. So the court should hold in this case that requiring Mr. Gonzalez to open his mouth and reveal his teeth was violated his fight against self-incrimination because it was testimonial, it was incriminating, and he was compelled to show his teeth.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you. The red light's on. Ms. Graham and Mr. O'Brien, thank you for your arguments and for the briefs distinguishing testimonial versus real and physical. An issue that other courts have grappled with, and we apparently will grapple with. That concludes our hearing in 12AP1818CR State versus Gonzalez. The court will take a few minutes recess, and then hear the second case. We are in recess.